This is an English-only episode. My guest today is Dr. Jeremy Krell. He is the founder and managing director from Reverve Partner. Reverve is a venture capital fund only for the oral health, for oral health tech and close oral businesses. It's very interesting to talk with Jeremy about why he created a fund, why there is a big need for a fund, why there isn't a fund yet for the oral health industry. He and his 75 people team receive around 300 decks of startups a year. And there are so many companies worldwide in Asia, in South America, in Europe, in the United States who create startups in the oral dental health business. So how do he decide which business they are trying to fund? How do they decide which business is the most prospective business? What are the dental trends? We talk about how to become a limited partner in the venture capital fund Reverb. Is it interesting for a dentist to invest in Bitcoin or in shares or to invest into the dental business? The business the dentist understands proper and understands right. So, dear listeners, take a deep dive into the venture capital and startup business in dental care. Have fun. Herzlich willkommen zum Praxisflüsterer Podcast Staffel 6 Dentale Startups. Ich interviewe agile Jungunternehmer und Unternehmerinnen, die mit innovativen Ideen, neuen Impulsen und einer ordentlichen Portion Mut die dentale Welt von morgen erobern. Was machen sie anders? Vor welchen Herausforderungen stehen sie? Wie wird sich ihrer Meinung nach der Beruf des Zahnarztes in Zukunft entwickeln? Und wie kann man sich heute schon darauf vorbereiten? Lass dich vom Gründerdrive dieser Überflieger anstecken und werde mit deiner Praxis noch erfolgreicher. Partner der Staffel ist die BFS. Hey, Jeremy, good to have you on my show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Christian. It's a pleasure to be here.
So where do I find you today?
Yeah, so I'm a general dentist. I'm based in New Jersey, about 40 minutes west of Manhattan in the United States.
Oh my goodness, pretty far away. So we just find a good appointment where it's in the early mornings on your side and it's here on the evening. But please tell our crowd, who are you and where are you from?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm Jeremy Krell. As I mentioned, I've been a general dentist for about a decade. In addition to that, I've really been heavily focused on the business side of dental. While I have three practices, I don't practice as much anymore. Instead, I focus on really the startup sector within dentistry. So my background is 18 years of startups with an MBA from Chicago Booth. I started in tech and then I went to health tech and then into oral tech. In the tech space, I started a web and graphic design company. I spun two companies off and sold them. And then I went to a luxury good and commodity service startup that scaled for 4 years before we sold it right before the 2008 market crash. I went from there to start a venture incubator in Boston, scaled it to New York, Chicago, San Francisco, ran it for 5 years before accepting a role at Oscar Health Insurance, where I led strategic provider innovations and development, which IPO'd about 11 months ago. It's a good day there. And then went to Quip, the subscription electric toothbrush oral health product company, ran the professional services division for about 4.5 years. And then ultimately took on a role of starting my own management consulting firm for oral health startups called the Barchester Bay Group, about 35 ventures under management there, 12.5 of my own investments. And so many of the startups saying, hey, it's difficult to find a single investment source in the space. And so I started Revere Partners, which is the first and only global independent venture fund for oral health, exclusively focused on oral health, very much by doctors for doctors. So the majority of my time today is spent as the managing director of Revere Partners.
Oh, this sounds like a couple of lives. So let's start up with three dental practices. So you're a dentist, as you said, you already have the three dental practices.
Yeah, I used to practice, you know, definitely prior to the pandemic, I was practicing even a couple of days a month. So even at that point, I was scaled down just due to the large focus on the business side.
Okay. And then why do you think about the health tech topics and the dental tech topics? So you could have been into the DSO market. You could have buy a lot of practices as well. You could have be a managing director of a big DSO and have like 200, 300 or 1,000 of practices all over the United States. So what was your decision not to keep on going with the practices or with even more practices and instead of going into the health tech and later on the dental health tech?
Yeah, you're right. You know, it is very much entrepreneurial in its own right to start a practice and expand it to, you know, a large DSO. And so certainly that crossed my mind. But what really struck me is two things about dentistry. First of all, you know, just in the United States, there's about $180 to $200 billion a year spent on the provision of dental care. But that doesn't even count, you know, all the products and services that are around it. That's about 3.7 to 4% of total healthcare spending in the US for comparison. Everything in dentistry sort of lags behind medicine, and medicine lags behind tech, right? So you have this, you know, small space, but it's not really that small, and it's lagging way behind, right? So it was ripe for innovation. The other thing that struck me was everybody's so focused on owning the four walls of the practice. What about all the stuff inside, right? When you kind of think of your home, you don't just own the walls of your home or the property that it sits on. You own the stuff that's inside of your home as well. And we don't really do that in dentistry. And so that was something that, you know, to me was a big open opportunity.
Okay, I got it. So you said you're in the MBA, so you make your MBA in what kind of program did you visit?
Yeah, I went to the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business in Chicago.
Okay, so you're not a techie like a programmer, so you're more a business guy. So you went into the health tech scene. You already said your pathway through until you ended up in the dental healthcare industry. And then you decided to make your fund. It's very interesting for me because I was looking for an oral venture capital fund for several years. I'm an LP of several venture capital funds, and I talked to a lot of managing directors of the funds, and I said, no, the market is too small. Even in Germany, we have a healthcare market insurance, a billing healthcare market about 30 trillion. And with all the sides right next to it, it's about 50 to 60 trillion, even Germany. So, and it's such a small country in comparison to the United States. So I think it's such a big market and nobody's ever focused on. And I was wondering why nobody's ever focused on. And do you have an explanation why there is so many money is distributed into everything which is called a SaaS model, tech model, and some D2C things, some boring D2C things, and nobody ever talked or nobody ever thought about creating a venture capital fund? And that was my learning about the last like 6 or 7 years. What do you think?
Yeah. So, you know, after spending a lot of time in this side of the space, I have to say, I think it really comes down to the age-old principle that most people just invest in what they know, right? And so for the majority of investors outside of that are not a dental professional, do not have a job role within the dental industry, they just don't really know oral health. They're not familiar with it. So they're clustered in investments in, I mean, even dentists themselves, we're clustered in investments in real estate. We're clustered in investments in the stock market, right? We're clustered in investments that our accountants or our financial advisors or our brother or sister-in-law tell us to be, right? There's generally a lot of clustering and investing in things that you're most familiar with. I think there's the assumption that you can't really invest in a space that doesn't have a centralized investment vehicle. Of course, you can invest individually, you know, but that's much harder to do. And we can talk about that a little bit later. And I think there's the assumption that the private equity funds, especially in the United States, run all investments in dental, when in fact, they're really only investing in the practices themselves. You know, so actually, when we first started Revere, we started with a data project. We access now about 600-700 companies. We followed at least 2 transactions on each of them, a raise, another raise, or an acquisition. And we, for the first time, really showed the way that a dental startup behaves, its return on investment, and how accretive it can be, right? On average, the data shows it takes about 4.8 years to get to about a 5.2x That's a 33 to 35% IRR, whereas our Revere team actually does it quite a bit quicker. In just 4 years, we can reach the same return, right? But that's never before been seen. If you're familiar with the, you know, the database pitch book, there is no pitch book for dental. There's no reliable, accurate, statistically significant data in pitch book. You can't just look it up. And so it was crucial for us to kind of start with that project, even though we knew it from our own track records. You need to be able to quantifiably prove it to investors. And so we put a lot of elbow grease into that to begin with, because it was a really important way of how we started.
Yeah, I'm very, very sure about that. If you don't have data, where do you raise your money from? So the big family office, they have their investment rules, and then you come up with something very new. So you kind of make the market, and you probably make or create a lot of possibilities for the startups, even of our season of the Praxis Füßler and of a lot of startups in maybe in Europe as well. So do you have a specific geographic territorium where you invest in, or do you say it's important for the oral dental health and then we invest worldwide?
Yeah, so the latter. We are global in both our investors and our investments. We have many, many, many investors from Europe and also many investments in Europe.
Okay. Oh, this is interesting. So how do you get your access done to Europe? So I'm very sure that you're very big implemented in the US market, but the US market, as far as I know, there is some borders even to the European insurance market, to the European dentist. What was your path to the European startups and to the European investors?
Yeah, look, it's not just Europe. We're in many other countries, Australia, Asia, and a variety of others. But, you know, look, we have some great investors and team members. We have a 75-person team and many investors, and there's a lot of familiarity with the systems in Europe. And obviously, there's very advanced technology development that happens there. So it's a prime market for us to be involved with. Some of those differences are advantages to these startups. For example, the CE process on different types of devices or therapeutics might differ from, you know, those in North America, like the FDA's process or Health Canada's process. So in terms of getting a startup to market quickest, it may actually make sense for them to do that in one country first versus another country. So it's important for us to be global.
You said in the first place that before you created the fund, you had your consultancy, so you would take care of your own investments. You made your own investments. I heard some, like you said 18, or did you say 35?
About a dozen and a half my own investments.
Okay. And you said you take care of your own investments, and then you said, okay, a lot of people say, I need to have the same service. I need to have the same access to the deals as well. So why did you think about not making just your family office, your investments bigger in your own investments, and instead of you creating a fund? Is there more access to bigger deals or to create a bigger team, or what was going on? I think that you need, you needed to create a lot of data that takes a couple of months, a couple of years maybe as well. And so you need to make the extra way to the goal. So why didn't you just get up some money and make your family office bigger? Is there a reason for that as well? Wusstet ihr schon, dass BFS Health Finance ein umfassendes Angebot an Weiterbildung anbietet? Das abwechslungsreiche Programm bietet immer genau die Themen an, die euch interessieren. Lasst euch von kompetenten Experten überzeugen, profitiert von echten Mehrwerten und vernetzt euch mit Kolleginnen und Kollegen. Ob in atemberaubenden Locations oder online, von genau dem Ort, an dem ihr euch gerne aufhaltet. Mit der BFS werden Fortbildung zum Erlebnis. Alle Infos unter meinebfs.de.
Yeah, so maybe let me give you some size and scope on Revere, and then I'll, you know, get into that answer. So Revere currently sees over 300 companies in its pipeline. We meet 2 to 3 new companies globally a day, at least, all with an application to oral health. No practices, just the tech inside the practice, which can range, by the way, from software to biotech to to consumer products, to payment or fintech, all over the place in oral tech. We have a 75-person team. We invest in 3 to 5 companies a quarter. We have 15 startups in our portfolio, soon to be 18. We have one that's been acquired. The main reason I tell you this is because it is far safer to invest through basically the machine that we've built than it is to invest on my own, right? And that's really why we do it. And I say that for a few reasons. The amount of deal sourcing that needs to be done, right? Individually, I can look at it, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, startups in a particular category. But as custom shoppers, just think about what you do on the internet before you buy something or in a store in an aisle, right? You're custom shopping. This Revere can look at 8, 10, 12, you know, competitive or comparable cases and help you get the best deal. It can diligence, right? While I can diligence fairly well on my own because I'm fairly savvy in doing this from years of experience, most are not. And on top of that, this function does it far better and inclusive of far many more perspectives than I can. Our team of 75 are leaders, renowned leaders from all over the dental industry, manufacturers, distributors, insurers, DSOs, labs, you know, you name it, experts from all different areas. We have a 26-point diligence process. There's no way I can personally go that deep on every deal. I just don't have the resources or the bandwidth. And then deploying the capital, the fund is able to deploy it in an agile capacity. It gets the early deals because of the brand recognition. It gets VC terms, the discounts, the guaranteed allocations, the caps, the interest, whatever are the deal terms. It definitely gets, you know, far better deal terms than an individual will. And then last but not least, it can support the startups or de-risk them post-investment. Revere's built this ecosystem of different support services from executive recruitment to executive coaching, DSO pilots, VC co-investors, to industrial designers, to regulatory infrastructure, to integrations into the major practice management systems. I mean, it offers a swath of different support services, you know, whereas individually, I could give them my feedback clinically. I can make a couple introductions for them, but there's no way that I can do the job of a machine, right? Revere also has built this proprietary tech stack that helps to match these deals and score these deals and make investment decisions based on the data that we've assembled. There's no way I could do that individually, right? I'd be going off of bias or off of what I know personally. And so, you know, for me, it made so much more sense to be investing through a centralized platform that's going to de-risk my investment.
Yeah, absolutely. I got it. I think it's even kind of more diverse investment. So you're maybe focused on that, what you see around your context you had. And now when you go out into other countries, you have other experts on the team, you have other experts on the table who got their part on the cap table as well, who got their interests, the same combined interest to you. I think that might help a lot to multiply the outcome and reduce the risk, the kind of a diversification, to get the right people onto your team. So what kind of deals are you looking for? So what kind of size deals are you looking at?
Yes, there can really be a range. You know, we are open doors to any deal, you know, in dental. We'll take a look at anything so that we know that we have the best. But say we invest the majority in Series A stage startups, about 45%. We do about 20, 25% in seed and 20, 25% in post Series A or follow-on investments. And then less than 5%, 10% in anything else. So the majority are growth stage, you know, companies that have, they don't all have revenue. You know, of course, they don't all necessarily have a completely finished product. Maybe it's an MVP or a prototype, but the vast majority do have revenue, users, a prototype, right? Obviously, that's, you know, really attractive from a return profile to our investors. And our job is, of course, to make the best investment for our investors. But the types of startups can really, really range over the categories that I mentioned before. Anything within dental, and we see so much inside of tech and SaaS, there's AI, there's patient engagement, you know, and more inside of biotech. We could have 3D printers, we could have aligners, all kinds of things inside consumer products, up market premium products, hygiene products, inside of fintech, paytech, there's different financing models, different revenue cycle management models, payment processors. There's so many different great ideas out there. It's our job to find the best ones and the ones that will implement properly in the practice and execute on their vision.
Okay. So is there a kind of a dollar or euro amount, would you say, this is a maximum case for your investment, or what are the propositions?
Yeah, so there isn't a specific dollar amount because it can very much vary by the opportunity. I'd say, we can lead rounds and we do lead rounds. More often than not, we are more of a strategic investor within the round. You know, our first check could be, somewhere in the $500,000, ballpark. And then we help the startups 6, 12, 18 months is their next round. And we look to make, say a $1.25, $1.5 million investment. These are, random benchmark numbers. The numbers can be lower. They can be much higher, and definitely vary by stage of the company and type of the startup. For example, a seed stage, biotech company is very, very different from a Series A stage software company. So we treat these differently internally so that we hit the right investment timelines and return profiles for each startup.
So where do your deals mostly come from? Is it the United States? Is it Europe? Is it Asia? What region are the most, you say, around the 300 decks in the year? So where are the most decks come from?
Yeah, I would say they're the most are in the United States, or at least trying to access the U.S. market regardless of where the company is based, as a primary objective. I think the U.S. has a pretty mature dental market. There's certainly a lot of spending on products and services in dental outside of just the provision of care, and it's a pretty fertile ground for startups. So I would say that the majority either come from the U.S. or, as a primary focus, want to access the U.S. market. But we definitely see a large number of startups coming from different countries globally. It's quite common. And many want to just operate in their country or in their continent. And that's okay too. For example, we have an investment in a company in Brazil, and they operate just in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are the main topics where your deck's from? Is it ortho? Is it digital? Is it like aligner? Is it 3D printing? Or do you have a feeling what is the most trend up right now, 2022? Or what do you see? What was it in 2021, 2020? What do you see there?
Yeah, it's good to kind of pair these two questions together because they correlate with one another. And in other words, the deals that we see tend to correlate with the trends. I would say high level, per the buckets that I gave before. Software probably is the slight majority, or I'd say slight to medium majority to the other buckets, which are the rest pretty even between software, biotech, consumer products, fintech, access to care / prevention, and oral systemic health links. Those six buckets are equally, tend to be equally around 15-20% a piece of what we see. I would say at this current moment, the software startups, probably have the majority. To talk about trends a little bit, which will, shed some additional light on that area, things that are hot right now in dental or dental tech, definitely everything ortho. Everything ortho is gold in dentistry. The patient's extremely interested in it. Providers, both the specialists and the general practitioners, interested in providing it. So everything ortho, from the aligners to the brackets and innovations around them, to software platforms that help to design the aesthetics and help take the complexities of the treatment planning and case acceptance process off the doctor's shoulders, to how to afford it and access it. Everything in the ortho continuum is very, very hot. Software as a service that generates reliable patient flow or revenue to the office, which generally are patient engagement services, but those that can really be proven, and those that have business models that stand behind delivering value to the practice first, are very, very hot. A practice is willing to spend money on something that will clearly generate it more patients or more dollars. So for example, I think in the US at this point, kind of live chat has become a no-brainer. right? You know, the idea of having a website is old now, right? The idea of spending on, you know, marketing dollars to drive patients to your website is also, you know, aged. Now, you know, the focus is on conversion rate optimization. How can I put things on my website to take that online traffic and convert it into people in my practice? So anything along that spectrum is hot. I would call it the biometric or in general microbiome space is pretty hot. In other words, you have this mouth full of 600 plus different bacterial species that, you know, really govern the health of everything going on in the mouth, right? You have data that shows that, you know, some 90, 95 plus percent of dental issues are preventable, right? But we also know that every mouth is different, and it's not just hygiene, it's diet, it's not just diet, it's genetics, right? So you come down to this the environment in the mouth. And so the ability to educate and create awareness among consumers that there are things in your mouth that are levers to control your health, the idea of truly diagnosing who are the bad actors of these 600 players and are they out of proportion? Are they out of management? And then lastly, how do we deal with that in a customized, you know, personalized medicine type of way? How do we look at those bad actors and put them in check in a way that makes sense for your mouth? So that spectrum is very, very hot. So, you know, everything scanner and aesthetic and digital, which kind of fit together, are very, very hot. How can we make scanners more affordable? How can we scan more teeth more quickly so that everybody sort of has a blueprint to their mouth? How can we be planning what you want to do on those teeth, crowns or implants or anything else? How can we plan that more accurately, you know, and how can we send it to mills and do it chair side? Those things are very, very hot as well. So these are just a few.
Oh, very interesting. I think especially the environment of the mouse, the 600 bacteria, I'm reading articles about that since years. And there are, for diabetes, there are a couple of bacteria which create or which helps diabetes to get through, and so many things what you can bring the dentist in a better position for the patient to become a good diagnostic doctor for the complete health. And I think this is just the beginning, that the dentist become even more important doctor for the complete human in diagnosis and in helping them to make the right treatments. And I think this field is close to less operated yet, because I'm not quite sure if I'm right. I think that not the half of them, not even 50% of the 600 bacteria is very well known. So first of all, you need to learn a lot of the bacteria, and you need to learn how to handle, how to treat, and what happens if you put them out, if you put them out of the mouth, if you starve them out or something like that. So there is, I think that's a very interesting field. Do you have already investment in that chapter?
We do actually. One company which was acquired, Brookbuilt, a Boston-based company that is a direct therapeutic and, you know, sort of a probiotic for the mouth. So it tells you, you know, what bacteria are there and doing bad things, and then, you know, provides a solution to put them back in check, is one investment. And we're certainly looking at several others into that space. It is a very tough, you know, definitely a very important space, a tougher one because there are, you know, there's deep science, you know, behind it, but one that is incredibly important. And you're right, you know, oral systemic health links are becoming much more popular and are definitely ripe for innovation. This idea of, you know, even at the professional level, how do we as dentists, hygienists, and I know it's a little different, you know, per country and the way that the health systems work, and it's a little different the way that the dental roles are, you know, and job responsibilities are allocated. But overall, how do we become, instead of a, you know, dentists are a specialist, and, you know, the specialties that we have in dentistry are almost a subspecialty of healthcare. How do we become part of the primary care of healthcare? And that is certainly something that we need to move closer to as a profession, because the research, you know, the links to your heart and cardiac health, the links to your brain, you know, and different conditions like Alzheimer's, the links to other systemic diseases like diabetes. I mean, there are many, many links that, you know, bad bacteria like P. gingivalis are playing a critical role in. And we're only going to be able to understand that and diagnose that and treat that if we invest in it.
Yeah. I think it maybe becomes the most important part of health, maybe in future, it's the longevity. So you, as you said, the Alzheimer's, the cardiovascular diseases, I read a study here in Germany. They opened up older people and they found so many dental bacteria close to the heart with strokes of not even old people, like 65, 70 people in the year of. So I think the topic longevity and to prevent healthy, long life, the treatment of the teeth and the your gum and your mouth room, your room in the mouth, it becomes so much more important. So it's not even about nice looking aligned and white teeth. It becomes a more deepened meaning that you can last long than more than 90 or even 100 years, not just with your teeth, but in a healthy way. And this is probably the job of the dentist in future. I definitely hope so that this will become the job of the dental practitioners in future.
Praxismanagerin mit IHK-Zertifikat, ein bewährter Lehrgang im neuen Hybridformat. Unsere theoretischen Inhalte werden in den ersten 8 Wochen online bei freier Zeiteinteilung vermittelt. Weil manche Inhalte allerdings in Präsenz am besten vermittelt werden können, geht es nach der Online-Phase an 6 aufeinanderfolgenden Tagen im schönen Schloss Wolfsbrunn weiter. Am letzten Tag wird vor Ort die IHK-Prüfung abgenommen. Lehrgangsstart ist im September 2022. Die detaillierten Inhalte, die Termine und die Anmeldemöglichkeiten finden Sie unter www.opti-pm.de. Sichern Sie sich jetzt noch einen der begehrten Teilnehmerplätze für 2022.
Absolutely. No, I think it will. We just have to, you know, layer that support in there for them.
Yeah. So it's very good that you created the fund to help these companies to start up working. And we looked on the one hand side where you invest in. On the other hand side, of course, like a venture capital fund used to be, you have like family offices, you have like dentists, you have like other people who invest in the fund. So how does that happen? So you need a couple of millions to bring the money to the companies. And where do you get the money from? And how is the process to invest into your fund? Is it even possible for a normal guy like me or like other people in Germany to become part of the Revere limited partner team? Would you please tell me about this?
Yeah, we have LPs from across Europe. So we would, you know, love to have additional investors from that region. It's actually a pretty straightforward process. So a little bit about our fund structure. We have a unique structure called the Rolling Fund that we created because we think it pairs well with the developing investment landscape in dentistry. So the way that it works is on a subscription basis. So you subscribe to a minimum of 4 quarters. That's just a call schedule of the money, which allows you to stay more liquid over time. The average, we have different levels of investors, angel investor, all accredited, and then, you know, high net worth individuals, family offices, funds, and corporates. For example, we have a big public OEM invested several million into us. So we have investors at all different levels on this quarterly basis. They subscribe, say, for example, $25,000 a quarter for 4 quarters, right? They like that because they stay more liquid over time rather than giving $100,000 up front. In addition, they get more diversified. We invest in 3 to 5 companies a quarter. Us as the general partners have better management over supply and demand so that we, you know, we don't face, like many funds, you have to invest X amount of money by X date, which often leads to perverse incentives like making hasty deals. We don't have that scenario. So our LPs tend to like that. And in addition, we stay open. So as new people like yourselves are finding out about this opportunity, you can invest, right? Unlike a traditional VC fund, which would have closed in our first 6, 12, 18 months of fundraising, and you wouldn't be able to get in. Now you can get in. Given our fund structure, you can enter in any quarter. So we have a typical VC fee structure, 2 and 20, 2% management fee. What that means is it comes off the front of the investment. It helps us fuel the growth of business. And then the 20% carried interest, what that means is, and we actually have a very investor-friendly approach to that, which is all investors have to be paid back their retrospective and prospective commitments. And then we assess the carried interest, meaning after they've been paid back all their money, we split the profits 80-20. So that is the typical fund structure, and it's fairly easy to get started. It involves reaching out to us, and you know, we can provide you a custom link. We do everything online, all through our online dashboard. So the process you can follow online, your banking you can follow online, all the investments we can make and your pro rata share of them or anything that happens with those companies, you have complete visibility at all times.
Okay. So is there a kind of a minimum invest you need to make as an LP?
So the only hard minimum we have are the 4 quarters minimum. Besides that, we really try to work with people. But the average angel investor is about $25,000 for 4 quarters or more. The average high net worth individual is about $50,000 for 5 quarters or more. The average family office is maybe $500,000 to $3 million in total subscription. So it can vary. It can vary below. It can vary above. You know, if people have a different idea, I encourage them to reach out, you know, with whatever, you know, monetary figure fits their financial budget, because we'd rather you stay with us, you know, over time and get more diversified.
Yeah, and I checked your website before and I talked to your very nice CFO, Dave. He's a great guy, by the way. He's very competent. I asked him a lot of questions. And so I saw on your website that you have some very, very interesting and famous LPs. So it's very interesting to check your website. So there are a lot of people who are very well known and who have a very big reliability all over the country, Europe, the United States. So I think we need some kind of fund in our business. It's a shame that we didn't have a fund like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but better late than never. So yeah, I'm very happy to have the opportunity to talk with you, to have the opportunity to took a deep look into your fund and your fund structure. And I'm very convinced about you and your team and very, very happy if you make a lot of deals in the United States, Europe, and Asia, and help in the all different channels to grow up a lot of very good startup in the dental business so that the dental business and the dentist at least can make a better job every day they stay on working. And thanks for your time, Jeremy. I very appreciate that you took the effort talking to me.
No, Christian, very much appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much for having me and for your support. Really appreciate your perspective on these things as well. Look, it takes a lot of us. This is an entire side of the industry. It's not just a product or a service. So it takes support kind of by doctors for doctors to get this done. Because I think we all as the profession want to be part of, you know, the part of the thesis here, right? We want to be part of the setting the standards for our own industry. It's very kind of self-regulatory. And I think, you know, there's a lot of desire to keep it that way. And so we have to be part of this, right? I always draw to the comparison of don't just own the four walls of your practice, own the stuff inside your practice too. Right? That's how our homes are. Why shouldn't our offices, where we spend just as much time, be the same way, right? So for those that are interested, please do check our website, reverepartnersvc.com. Please reach out to myself, Jeremy, at reverepartnersvc.com if you're interested in learning more. And on top of that, if you mention Praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, we'll make sure you get a discount on the investment. Thank you so much.
May you can provide me with some infos. I put it in the show notes. Then our listeners just can easy click on the button. That may help. So I think it's a good thing to do. And at least we didn't talk about that, but I know so many dentists who like bought shares, stock shares, like for Bitcoin, who bought some NFTs and so on and so on. I usually think, okay, the dentist normally knows best about his business, has the best feeling about the business, can try out things, what works and what doesn't work and so on and so on. Why don't invest in the things I know best? Yeah. So this must be it, at least.
Yeah, completely agree. It's age old principle, invest in what you know. We know this, we just didn't have a platform to do it. That is really why we founded Revere.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jeremy. Have a great week. Have a great time. See you and meet you later on. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I hope that you guys enjoyed the time talking with Jeremy. Jeremy is a very smart guy. He is a New York, New Jersey based, and he made a lot of investment in the dental business before he created a fund. And now he's, as a dentist and as a businessman, he is very experienced how to handle this kind of investment. So it's, I think, just another way to think about a dental business, trying to think like Jeremy. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you enjoyed it, please give me 5 stars at Apple, iTunes or Spotify. And thanks, and see you on the next episode. Your Christian Henriksen.